So I am going to be the chairperson. I'm Ellen M., an addict and alcoholic. This is greet the women attending the panel. We have myself, Ellen M., and Shirley from Atlanta, Georgia. Beverly W. from Clarkston, and Laura Z. from Lilburn, Georgia. Okay, and I'm Ellen, an addict and alcoholic. I'm going to get this started. This is a session on live and let live, alternative living, as they tell me. And the first speaker is myself. So I wanted to read a little something from the big book and get this started, and then I'm going to have Ann S., and then Beverly Walker will be next, and then Laura Z. will do the closing, and to remind me to turn the power off when you guys start talking. On page 181 in the big book, unlike most of our crowd, I did not get over my craving for liquor much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. It was almost always with me. At no time have I been anywhere near yielding. I used to get terribly upset when I saw my friends drink, and I knew I could not, but I was schooled myself to believe that though I once had the same privilege, I had abused it so frightfully that it was withdrawn. So it does behoove me to squawk about it after all, nobody ever had to throw me down and pour liquor down my throat. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic who have any other form of intelligent pride, whatever, which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think if you're strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor for good and for all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, is what he was saying here, it took me a while to get over the urge of drugs and alcohol. And today is about a way of learning how to live this program, and it takes honesty, openness, and willingness. You know, and what it's saying here, I cannot stay sober without the we of the program. And when I try to do that, I'm always taking my will back and getting control of my own life. And I know that I can't do that without attending meetings and the help of others and my higher power. I had to take all the suggestions that people were offering me, to change those people, places, and things, to put this program as my priority, and to get sober first. I do not resist the literature. I do not find fault in the meetings. I take what I need and leave the rest. And it says, I remember them telling me, don't leave before 5 minutes before the miracle. And they taught me how that's not on my time, it's on God's time, of the God of my understanding. And through Alcoholics Anonymous, I have learned to accept life on life's terms, to accept situations and people as they are, and instead of how I would like them to be. That took me a long time to do that. I wanted to control. I wanted everybody to be the same as I. And to get this and want this as much as I wanted it. And there's, for a lot of people in this in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot of us that need it. But you have to want it. Well, anyway, I had to stay humble what God has planned for me, and the willingness to see that my life is not, I don't have lot charge of my life, and that there is a power greater than I that has that charge. And I have to keep on going to meetings to be reminded of that, because I can take the we out of it as soon as possible and get back into my own control, into my own program, and it's our program. I was talking to a sponsee this morning. We've had a lot of losses this year. You just have to let people be, to go through their own losses and to experience the way they need to do it. And that is a part that I have learned about this living and let live. That I cannot control people. The gentleman that has died last didn't get this program all the way. And it's not by me judging him. I saw his frustration and the difference in others. And by being around and helping other alcoholics achieve sobriety, you can see who wants it and who needs it. And I can't always pull people to grow across the bridge with me to this spiritual life. I have to let people have their own spiritual awakening and go on the level they can go on. But I know that for myself, which is a stingy program, I have to keep on looking at what I need to do and live my own life, because there's a lot to do, and I've been around, and I still don't know what, the longer I'm in here, the less I know. But I saw this gentleman, and he was right in the middle of the bridge, and as I say, I went to three funerals in December, and I saw the difference. I saw the dry drunk behaviors, and I guess that's the wisdom to know the difference now. I saw the spirituality of one and not the other. And this particular last gentleman, I saw that no one knew him, because he was still in the middle of that bridge. And he was struggling at the beginning of the bridge and at the end of the bridge. And and you just have to let people be and hope they will make it across that bridge. And it's very sad. I talked to one of my sponsees this morning that lost his partner, and his partner was truly into this program. He lived it, he walked it, and it's not all about just talking the talk. It's about walking the talk. And I went to two particular funerals of his, and I saw how him speaking, him walking the talk, the difference in the one that couldn't walk it. There was a lot of love for him at Piedmont Hospital, and there's a lot of love for him through AA and at the Peterson's funeral home. And you could see that he touched a lot of people's lives. And it makes me sad, because I heard his partner this morning in deep sorrow for the one that just died. And it was sadness that he died alone. I don't want to be there. I thought I always was going to die through drugs and alcohol. And this way of life, through the steps, I've had a chance to live and walk to talk. I really get a lot from working with others, and seeing them blossom. And it's like the wisdom to know the difference. You know the ones that just, need it and don't want it. And I'm sorry to say I don't have time for that. But I allow them and I encourage them to come in, come to these meetings in 90 days. I give them what I was given. And that's how I've made it through this program, is about if you don't give it away, you can't keep it. I love this program, and it has been a bridge back to life, and it has taught me to forgive, especially myself, And so I can start forgiving others and be more understanding and being understood. It's been very hard for me, and I think that's part of living and let live, is allowing the restraint of tongue and allowing people to be where they are. I can't control them, and as much as I want to. I have had to let go of a lot of things, even in AA. We're not all here when we get here. And but that has not pushed me away from meetings. And again, I repeat, you take what you leave, what you need, and leave the rest. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. For a long, long time after I came in this program, I used to have to get up in front of microphones and audiences and make a few talks that were associated with my work, and I was always terrified that I was going to get up and say, my name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic. It never happened, but I suspect there were a lot of people in those rooms that knew it because I had been working in that same agency for about 20 years when I came into this program, and I had been drinking for at least that long as well. For me, the slogan, live and let live, is a two-part thing. One is to learn to live. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I truly had no concept of what it meant to live. I grew up in a household in which my parents had said repeatedly that drinking was morally wrong, that only people who had something wrong with them drank, and there was just something wrong with anybody who did. And there were a lot of other messages that went along with that. I just accepted all the messages of my parents as being factual and right when I was living at home. And when I got to college, and it was a church-based college, those same principles were preached, and I accepted that. Never questioned in my mind what was right or wrong for me. I just accepted whatever anyone else said. My second job after I got out of college was with an agency that sent me away to a 13-week training program. And I found myself as the only person in a group of 17 who didn't drink. And I was sharing an apartment with four women in that training class, and all of them had grown up in environments where social drinking was accepted as normal, and they accepted that as being the normal thing to do and okay to do. Well, it took me about 2 weeks to quickly drop the beliefs that I had growing up and to pick up their beliefs. And that's sort of the way life was for me all the years before coming to this program. Whatever the people in the group I was with espoused as their beliefs, I just took as mine. And it never occurred to me until I got to AA that I had a right to look inside, or a responsibility to look inside and decide what felt right to me. That beginning in that training class way back in 1961 was the beginning of my drinking, and in the beginning I only drank when I was with people who drank. And for several years that's the way it was. If I was with people who drank, I drank. If I was alone, I didn't, because it didn't occur to me. And if I was with people who didn't drink, I didn't drink. And I just tried to be a chameleon and just be whatever the people around me expected me to be. And that carried over to all aspects of my life. And later on, after I had been drinking for several years, it started occurring to me to drink when I was by myself. It started occurring to me to drink before I went out socially so I would feel more at ease. And in a matter of a few years, I drank whether I was with people who drank or not. And over time, the drinking and the disease took over, and I didn't have control over whether I drank or not. That same effort, though, to be what other people expected me to be, continued right up through the time I came into this program. About 7 or 8 years before coming into this program, I first began getting in touch with my sexuality, And it scared me so much that the first time I was with someone for a same-sex relationship, I applied for a transfer and moved to another town. I wasn't about to do anything that was going to be frowned on by the people around me, because I just didn't have any sense of who I was and didn't have any sense that it was okay to be who I was. Needless to say that, you know, shortly after moving to that new town, this same situation occurred again. And that time I didn't move, and I gradually allowed myself to get involved with another woman and proceeded to keep it secret for 7 years. It was only after I was in the hospital being treated for alcoholism that I dared share that information with anyone else. And that was the beginning of coming to a point of acceptance of me and acceptance of myself. And fortunately, the last day before I was going to be discharged from that program, one of the nurses came to me and took me off in a corner and whispered in my ear that there were some meetings in town for alcoholics who happened to be like me, and that you had to have a secret contact to find out where they were. And she gave me the name and telephone number of two people who were in the meetings that were being held secretly for gays. And even that little bit of information seems strange today, when our meetings, we have a gay clubhouse here in Atlanta, and it's become far easier for me to feel open and to live my life openly and honestly as a result of those meetings, and I'm real grateful for that. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous truly caused me to start looking at who I was, what I believed, and to have the courage to act on those beliefs and those principles. And when I first started going to meetings, then people would say to me, you know, you've got a choice. You can choose to drink, or you can choose not to drink. You can choose to work this program and recover, or you can choose to be hard-headed and do it your own way and try to be on your own, and chances are you won't stay sober. And whenever I heard that statement, you can choose to be who you want to be, and you can choose to be what you want to be, it was scary. Here I was in my 40s, and I had never formed my own values, my own core of beliefs. And quite often, it was so scary to pray for willingness and what my answer was. They usually came, and they didn't come as a flash, something written to read, but my higher power would see through intuition, and I would know what I needed to do. The second part of the phrase live and let live is the part that has been one that I continue to have to struggle with. I had gotten so opinionated about what was right and what was wrong based on what I had accepted from other people that I continued to want to apply those things to other people. After I came in the program, and I continued to think, well, if I'd figured this out for myself, that this is what ought to be and this is the way things ought to be, then I would try to impose that on other people. When I started working the steps, I got to realize, and it was a shock initially, got to realize that this focus of, first of all, not knowing who I was and trying to please everybody else by pretending to be and pretending to think what they indicated they wanted of me was the basis for my resentment. This self-centered way of living, of trying to please everybody else so that I would get approval, so that I would get acceptance, so that I would not face rejection, wound up as the primary base in that fourth column, that invisible column, what is my part in every one of these resentments that I have. That was it. It started with me. And as I went on in my life and continued that self-centered way of interacting with other people, it got to be a barrier to my relationships. They would retaliate. They would resent the fact that I was trying to impose my will and my ideas on them, or that I was trying to manipulate them into doing what I wanted them to do, just out of my own selfish thinking. And I had to change that. In one of the letters that Bill W. wrote, he said, "Our first problem is to accept our present circumstances as they are, ourselves as we are, and the people about us as they are. This is to adopt a realistic humility without which no genuine advance can even begin. When I came to the program, it was essential that I accept who I was. And it is continuing to be essential that I accept who other people are and how the world is as it is. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to meetings and complained, or I've gone to my sponsor and complained about some fact in my life, some circumstance in my life, something somebody in my life was doing, only to be told, look at page 449. Oh, when you're already upset enough to want to cry, and you're told to look at page 449, it's a humbling experience. I had to run into that time and time and time again before it became sort of automatic to stop and think, if I'm upset about something, what's going on here? This is about me, that I'm not accepting either this person, this situation, this decision that is beyond my control, that's making me miserable, making me angry, making me sad. And today I do realize that acceptance is the basis for all my happiness. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I didn't have a chance to learn how to live. And for a long, long time, in the beginning for me, I had trouble accepting that I was an alcoholic. Even after my life had gotten to be pretty much in shambles and I was forced into treatment, because I was not one of those souls that was brave enough to walk into treatment on my own. I was cornered, trapped, and hauled off there. And even after going through that treatment program and coming to meetings, there was some little myth back in my head that said, you know, this can't be true about you, Ann. It's just all those circumstances in your life. It's all those things that people were doing to you. It was all those pressures that were on you that made you drink the way you drank. And I silently sat in those meetings pretending to belong, pretending to be taking in what was said, and at the same time thinking, after a year, I'll prove that I'm not an alcoholic, and then I can go back out and drink. And I'm just so grateful today that I heard my story told enough times. I heard my insides described by enough people in those rooms that by the end of that year, I was able to come to complete acceptance that I was an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I'm powerless over what alcohol does to me when I put it in my system, and I had to give up any idea of returning to drinking as a normal person. There's no such thing as going back to drinking like I did 20-something years before I came in the program, which was maybe have one drink if I was with a group of people who were drinking, but maybe go 3 or 4 weeks and not have any desire to drink again. That's not in the cards for me. As I used to hear early on in this program, the difference between a cucumber and a pickle is a cucumber can become a pickle, but you can't turn that around. And I was fully pickled by the time I got here. I'm very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for having given me a life. I feel like I was given a chance for a second life, and I'm now almost 19 years old, and I love it. I wouldn't go back for anything in the world, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Hey, everybody. And I'm scared to death. Nervous. Oh, you know, coming here was like hitting a home run. I need this so bad this weekend. My life is so busy. And it's time to slow down and take a break. And let God do his thing. You know, I knew nothing about living before I came to AA. Nothing about living. The principles to the steps go totally against my nature. Totally against my nature. See, I was a limousine driver, so you know I kept alcohol. And my thing was chasing women and chasing limousines and chasing that alcohol. And happy when you got out of my car so I could go park. See, I mastered it because I knew to drink the alcohol that you couldn't smell and just put a little cranberry or a little orange juice with it. And tell you I'm drinking cranberry juice or orange juice. Steady lying to myself. So when I came to AA, when they said, the women get with the women, and the men get with the women, the men, I thought I had a ride. I thought I had arrived. And it wasn't until I heard that I kept coming back. But I stayed around here just a few 24s and found something different that I truly wasn't looking for. That I wouldn't trade for no limousine and no drink of alcohol. No lottery ticket. It is indescribable. And all they are principles. Principles. A set of principles somebody has given me to practice. And thank God they said practice them. Because I truly don't do them perfect. But I've gotten better. And it's a result of taking those suggestions, going to those meetings, doing something that is asked of me that I don't want to do. And my sponsor told me I get the best results when I do something I don't want to do. And I'm finding that to be quite true. You know, when we were talking about, it was mentioned to me the topic of live and let live, I was thinking about my resentment list. I was thinking about my father and my mother, and I was thinking about how I've made it through having this resentment I held against my father for 30-something years. I won't tell you how old I am. I'm older than that. But for 30-something years, I held the resentment against my father, and I did what they told me to do, and I ran into my father at a wedding, and I didn't know my father was going to attend this wedding. See, this is how God works. I knew it was his will. It wasn't mine, and it was in his timing. And I got so excited because I always wanted the love of my father. I always just wanted my daddy to love me and be all right with who I was. So I had the opportunity of inviting my dad to my 5th year celebration. And he came, and I made amends to my father at my birthday and told him I was sorry for holding on to those resentments I had against my dad for so many years, because he didn't know me and I didn't know him. And when I look back at my dad's history, my dad was alcoholic and addict. So you can imagine what my childhood was like. And my dad wasn't even around when I was born. So how could I continue to hold resentments against my father and he didn't even know what he was doing to me? And that's what this program has helped me with. And my dad came to my birthday, and I was so proud that he came to my birthday, because it reminded me of him not coming to see me play basketball when I was a kid, because I was the star player of the team, and my parents never saw me play. And when I gave him my chip, it felt really good to do that. And I made those amends, and I let my dad go. And I've only talked to my dad twice, because I'm going on 8 years sober. And I've talked to my dad twice. Over the last 3 years, and today I'm all right with that. And I didn't do that. because I was so used to, when something bothered me, to hold it against you. And you didn't even know I wasn't allowing you to live. I only knew it because I found out being around here that for me, resentments were like me taking poison and waiting on you to die. So I came in here still committing suicide. So if I could do that with Dad, why can't I do it with everybody else? My best friend. I heard you share about a friend not wanting this way of life. I never had a real best friend, and I found somebody. I wanted them to be my best friend, but they don't want to live this way of life. Their behavior. When I first got here, it was okay for you to be that way, but something has happened since I've stayed around here and heard something. Something has happened. You were saying how it feels on the inside. It don't feel good on the inside to do a lot of things that I know is not right for me today. It don't feel good. And today when something don't feel good to me, I don't act out on it. And I didn't do that. Because I'm used to liking and doing what kills me. I didn't know nothing about living coming to AA. Nothing about living. And I have to allow my friend to live, and I have to continue to move on because we have three mottos in AA. And I read them out of the big book, and I read them every day. In the family afterwards, on page 135, it says, first things first, live and let live, and easy does it. Also in the family afterwards, I read this quite frequent on page 133. It says, we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that life is a veil of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid, then, the deliberate manufacturing of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as an opportunity to demonstrate his omnipotence. Thank you. I didn't plan on crying either. If I had known I was going to cry, I'd have had me a case of Kleenex sitting up here by me. See, I was trying to be like them. They didn't have Kleenex, so I wasn't going to have Kleenex. The two ladies before me didn't cry, so I said, God, okay now, good, wasn't nobody sitting there, so the angels and God sat right there, and I said, don't let me cry, but I forgot I'm not in control. But I just like to say to the newcomer, I remember being a newcomer, coming to AA and feeling all alone because of my sexuality. I like to say to you that my disease has nothing to do with my sexuality. It has nothing to do with black or white, Puerto Rican, Jew, gay, lesbian, any of that. I have a mental, physical, and spiritual disease that AA has taught me that I don't have to continue to keep killing myself. I know today that I am a true miracle. A true miracle. I never thought my goal would be to be a maximum service to God and people. I never thought that I would want to be with peace with my fellows. I always wanted to push you away. I don't want you to get to really know me. And today God has blessed me with so many, many, many things and many people that show me lots of love. I'm in a wonderful relationship. I never thought an alcoholic like me would be in a wonderful relationship. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know anything about wonderful. The love of my mother, and my mother's a minister. and the love of my mother. We go to the symphony. I didn't do that. It was through this program. I take my mom to the symphony. I take care of my mother. God has blessed me where I can take care of my mother. I own my own business. I didn't do that. Everything I did was totally against what y'all have taught me here, and I'm grateful. And I really needed this convention this weekend. I need this convention this weekend because I don't want to forget where I came from. I don't care where I go or how big I get or how much money I get or how much I strive to be on the cover of that Black Enterprise. I don't want to forget where I came from. Look, let's get real now. You know I had to throw that in there. But I just want to say to y'all, enjoy the weekend and give somebody a hug that you don't think you would normally hug. Because that's where my recovery has taken me. I know today that I can be all right with people I think I don't like. Because I'm standing around here realizing it's not you I don't like, it's me I don't like. And it's so true, when something bothers me, when what you're doing bothers me, God just telling me, baby, we got some more work to do. Because it's bothering me that my friend didn't come to this convention with me this weekend. I want to kick her ass, excuse me. And before breakfast, I did use my cell phone and cuss her out. Forgive me, God. But I'd just like to thank y'all for being here. Thank you.
Wow. That was great. My name's Laura. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Laura.
I want to thank the panelists that have already shared. Very powerful messages. This is so emotional. I can't even describe it to you. Was anybody here last night? KS, was that not the best? Did you? Yeah. Thank you. When you mentioned that you realized your sexual preference, I was waiting for everybody to get up and walk out. And it was just so God-loving to be able to sit there and see everybody stay. I've only been out for about 7 years, and you came out a lot sooner than I did. And I literally thought I'd walk away, and it made me understand this live and not live thing. So thank you very much for your story. You know, since I was told to do this, been trying. Oh, that's what, I'm sorry, suggested. I've been trying to live and let live. And, you know, it's like working a step. I've been trying to incorporate this in every little piece of my life. And I didn't want to start too soon because I didn't want to get too overworked over it. So I started on Sunday, right? And I'm working in the yard and got the headphones on, and Elton John has a song, Live and Let Live. It starts right there, and from that day forward, it just, everywhere in my life, it was live and let live. That afternoon, I was letting the birds live, which was a very easy thing to do, you know? And this is one of the things that I've got to do to live and let live, is take care of myself. And I'm still learning how to do this. And playing in my yard, which we had a big ice storm down here, and playing in my yard this weekend was cleaning up brush and branches and whatever, that was taking care of me. It's the things that I've got to do to God, to be loving and caring and sweet and not a bitch. Bottom line, you know, being with nature is one of those things for me, and everybody has their own little thing, and that's the one for me. So anyway, that kicked off my week-long journey of living and let living. So it was a good day. Sunday was, you know, very successful with that because I was in my element. I was doing a good job. So my next little chore was to figure out, you know, what is live and what live and let live. And I really liked what Ann said about, you know, there's two components there, because for me, what I was thinking is, you know, that the piece of let live, there's two components to that, and the one is to not be prejudiced of gay people, of black people, of Puerto Ricans, of whatever nationality, or of, you know, people that I just don't like. The other piece of it, which you defined as live, which I just define as easy living for me, is just going about my day calmly and not stressing out and not getting pissed off at people, places, and things around me, whether that be the traffic, whether that be registration at the conference. Did y'all have a good time? Who's volunteering here? A round of applause for these people. I showed up last night, and, you know, it was a long day. I was with Ellen, and so we were both at the same memorial service last night. And, you know, when you go through something like that, you're already vulnerable. And you can either take the side of live and let live, or you can take the side of be very angry and just take that anger out on anybody and everybody that comes in your path. And when I got here last night, that's where I was. That was my state of mind. I was vulnerable. I could go either way very easily. And, you know, I'm waiting in line. There's a girl behind me, and Z is my, you know, last name, starts with a Z. She was a W or whatever. And the girl, you know, that was taking care of me was, she was confused. She didn't know where the Z's were. And so she went and asked somebody else, and the girl behind me had no patience. She was not going to tolerate this. She just walked in front of me and started going through the bags, and I was like, do I want to live and let live here? Or do I want to spike out at this woman right here, right now? And I thought, you know, I got to give this talk tomorrow about live and let live. So I'm going to try to live and let live tonight. Tomorrow afternoon I can start being a bitch again. The woman who was taking care of me was so sweet, because she really did. She really had a difficult time finding where the Z's were. That's the way it's been all my life. Z's are always difficult to find. So probably about 5-10 minutes later, she found my packet, and I said thank you, and she was very sweet, and she said thank you for being so patient. And I walked off, and I was like 5 tables away, and she came running over, and she handed me this peach. And she said, you know what? I wanted to give you this peach because you were so sweet. That's live and let live. You know. She gave me a hug. This conference is just going to, you know, I can tell that was just the start for me. And I could go through the next couple of days being, you know, upset and not living my life the way that I need to live it, or I can absorb it the way that you are describing. Let God kick in. Oh, my gosh. Let God kick in. I was telling you about, you know, the journey of my week and trying to, you know, really incorporate live and let live in my life. And Mondays I usually work at home, and Tuesdays I go out on client sites. And I'm working at a job where there's what I'm coining now is a hostile takeover going on. And the takeover's on me and my team. And throughout the week I have really sucked at live and let live, I'll tell you this. This afternoon I've got a meeting that I've got to go to where I've got to live and let live. And you know, this is what, these are the things that get very tricky for me, because when I'm in my work environment, I still struggle with what's right and what's wrong. And this is where my sponsor really comes in handy. Because you know what, if it's a choice between being happy and being right, my first defense is go for right. Who cares about happiness? So, anyway, my sponsor usually steps in and explains that that's not the right way. But this has been what God's done for me this week, is because this hostile takeover really started about a month ago, and it's going to last for several months at least. And you know, I really don't want to go through it being defensive every step of the way. And this is the other side of live and let live. This is not about the gays, the lesbians, the blacks, all of that. This is about the people that I just think that I'm better than. you know. Like, if you want to take this over, you got to do it as good as I do it. Otherwise, I'm not going to let you have it, you know. And it's one of those scenarios of I want to do this gracefully, you know. And I want to set an example for other people. And throughout the week, I keep saying to myself, if I take the high road here, everybody else will take the high road too. You know, and in my life, that usually works. If I just take the high road, and a high road means to be loving, to be caring, to be understanding. You know, it's that third step prayer. You know, it's not the I'm right. It's not the there's only one way to do it, and it's my way. It's not the you don't know because you haven't walked through my shoes. It's none of those things. It's really just being understanding and caring of where that person is in their life. I don't know how long I talked, and I have one other little short story to share because we're supposed to wrap up. What time do you know? Anyway, I'll share this short story and then I'll get off of here. This is real important to me, and I over the last year I've gone through a real difficult time. I ended a 6-year relationship, and I turned very bitter and very angry. I didn't live and let live. And I lost a very close friend to that. And that friend left very clearly because I was very angry and bitter and couldn't live and let live. And through the course of that, you know, I'm about 9, 10 months on the other side of that breakup. The last 4 to 5 months, at least, I've watched people walk through their lives and walk through very difficult things and not be bitter and not be angry and to live a happy life. And watching those people do that has given me a new perspective, given me a new strength, and given me a new hope to try to walk that way of life, to suit up, to show up, to do the next right thing, to not be intolerant of others, to not be critical of others. That really. So part of me doing this in my life, I have a hard time with have a God of my understanding because I do. But it goes back to that controlling thing that I just don't know if he can do it as well as I can. You know? I've done it before. I know how to do it. And I can do it right. And I've given my story on numerous occasions. I've done a lot of presentations for my job. I've been in front of groups quite frequently. And in every one of those, and I've got almost 9 years of sobriety, so I've been in front of crowds in AA and work. And every one of those up until today, I prepared what I was going to say. This is the very first time ever that I haven't prepared. I showed up. Everything I said came from God. I don't know. Well, you all can tell me what I said later because I'm not sure what it all said. But that is the other piece of this for me, was to be able to do this. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty scary. But y'all laughed. And I only saw about 3 people leave, so it must have been okay. I can't tell you what it's done for me, though, inside my heart. It's given me a little more step and a little more effort and a little more strength and a little more hope that I can live and let live through God and let God direct it all. So this is a great place to be. I hope to see you all a lot over the next, you know, couple of days here. And keep living and let living. Thanks.